Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Okay, James, Mrs. Carver said gently. It's your turn to present your report. 10-year-old James didn't respond. Hey, James, we're in here, yelled one of his classmates. James turned his gaze from the classroom window and looked around, startled at the attention. James, Mrs. Carver repeated, we'd like to hear your report now. James looked around the classroom, a flash of alarm across his face. Do you have your report in your desk? Mrs. Carver prompted him. I bet it's in your folder. James peered into his desk as though it were a new discovery and stuck both hands inside. Soon books, rulers, notebooks, and folders cascaded onto the floor. His classmates couldn't contain their laughter. Mrs. Carver came over and put a hand on his shoulder. Why don't we let Haley go next while you're getting your report ready? Okay? James looked at his teacher as though she had spoken in a dialect that was not quite English and looked in dismay at the mess around him. Hey, man, his classmate Dell exclaimed. He reached over and handed James one of the fallen notebooks. Here you go. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about and how can we help ADHD kids in school? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today can help us sort through some of the information with regard to kids who have ADHD learning to manage themselves in school. Dr. Jacqueline Eisman is a licensed clinical psychologist who has worked in a variety of hospital, school, and clinic settings, including Children's National Medical Center, Dr. William R. Stixrud & Associates, LLC, the Lab School in Washington, D.C., the Devereux Foundation, and several group private practices in Maryland and Virginia. She works with children, adolescents, and families through psychotherapy, consultations, and assessment. Dr. Eisman, together with Dr. Steven Silverman and Sue Jeweler, has written a new book, School Success for Kids with ADHD. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Eisman.
Thank you for having me here. I'm really glad I could be here to discuss this important topic.
What's the biggest myth about students with ADHD?
That's a really good question. I believe the biggest myth surrounds that ADHD is volitional. It's often said that kids with ADHD, such as James in your introduction, if he would only pay attention, if he would only sit still, he would be able to do better in school and in other activities. However, this is really a true neurological disorder, and motivation alone is not a cure. While a high level of motivation will improve productivity in the short term, it does not promote sustained success. So let's talk a little bit about what ADHD is.
Thank you.
ADHD stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. There are really three types of ADHD. The first type is the inattentive type. This child, like James, often has difficulty focusing, daydreams, makes careless mistakes, and has a hard time following instructions. The distinguishing factor is that this child does not display a high level of activity. This type of ADHD is more common among girls than among boys, and it's sometimes overlooked because this child sits quietly in the class, misses information, but is not a disruption.
So sometimes it doesn't come to light till after the child has done poorly on tests and so forth.
Exactly. And sometimes among the inattentive type, it's not even picked up until they're a teenager.
Oh, wow. So they can sort of barrel through because they're smart enough to sort of manage it.
Exactly.
That's interesting. What percentage of kids have this kind?
That's a good question. I think it's a pretty even split, but like I mentioned, the girls are more likely to have the inattentive type, and then the boys are more likely to have the second type, known as the hyperactive type. So the hyperactive type is characterized by kids that have a high level of activity. They tend to be more impulsive, and they also tend to be more restless. While girls can be diagnosed with this type of ADHD, as I mentioned, it's much more common among boys. And then the final category of ADHD is called the combined type because children in this type have both symptoms.
Poor kids.
Of inattention and hyperactivity. In all types of ADHD, however, the symptoms must occur at a level that's much higher than among their peers. So much higher than expected for their developmental level.
Which means that classroom teachers sort of have to know what's normal antsiness and what's really out there. And if their standards are everybody better sit still all the time and pay attention, sort of like good soldiers, then they might diagnose kids who are really perfectly normal.
That's exactly right. They need to be aware of what's normal for that developmental level and then kind of think about what makes sense for the child in comparison to their peers and figure out if this is a true disorder or if this is just some kids having fun in school.
Linda and I both had experiences as high school teachers teaching kids who were a little bit antsy, but they weren't hyperactive necessarily. And I remember personally having a class of eighth graders, might have been 14 or 15 kids, all were boys, all had failed at least once. Mm-hmm. It was quite an interesting class for a novice teacher. I was 21 years old and absolutely terrified. But I remember one thing that I noticed, they all seemed sort of too big for their desks. They seemed misplaced. And I remember letting them sit on shelves, letting them sit wherever they needed to in order to be able to concentrate. And I was thinking, I don't know how many of these kids were true ADHD, but allowing them that muscular freedom made a difference in their ability to concentrate.
Absolutely. Knowing your students and what they need is so important to be a really good teacher.
We didn't have the diagnoses that exist today when we were teaching those kids. I had kids in my classes that used to wander around the room while I talked. If I let them do that, they paid attention to what was going on. But I didn't know any reason to do that except that it worked.
So it sounds like both of you as teachers really knew what worked for your students.
Trial and error, but. What's the most important thing for parents to remember?
Well, parenting a child with ADHD can be exhausting at times. It also can be very rewarding. The day-to-day management of ADHD is often complicated at times, and it can be difficult. But older teenagers and adults provide us with evidence that appropriate management of these symptoms during childhood can yield a very productive, successful adult life.
Like what? I mean, in terms of managing of the symptoms.
Mm-hmm. There's a whole host of different things that go into managing the symptoms. Knowing that you're not alone as a parent and working together with professionals is very important.
So networking kinds of things is a good idea.
Are there support groups for parents?
There are many support groups out there for parents. One of the national groups is the Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, also known as CHADD, which can be found on the internet at CHADD.org, CHADD.org.
Okay, much better than the hanging chads from the 2000 election, right?
Absolutely.
Dr. Eisman, how is ADHD usually diagnosed? And just a little aside, would you throw in how old children have to be before you can recognize something like that?
Absolutely. ADHD is diagnosed, and there's a lot of confusion around the diagnosis of ADHD. ADHD is a disorder where the symptoms need to be present prior to the age of 7. So ADHD can be diagnosed in really very young kids, but it's important to separate what's just an active or inattentive young kid that's appropriate for their developmental level and then what actually is ADHD.
So that means how do you figure out if a 2-year-old has ADHD? All 2-year-olds act like they have ADHD.
That's very difficult to do, and it takes a good professional expert to examine that and make sure that they really understand what is appropriate for a 2-year-old, since 2-year-olds have a lot of energy and move around quite quickly. Oftentimes, parents seek out medication before the condition is clearly or properly identified. It's important to remember, though, that there are other conditions, like you mentioned, just being a 2-year-old, that can frequently resemble ADHD. And there are other medical and mental health disorders that also can resemble ADHD. And these should be ruled in or ruled out by professionals. Parents often find it helpful to speak with their pediatrician or family doctor first, and sometimes the pediatrician or a family doctor will make the diagnosis. However, in more complicated cases, they'll often refer to another mental health professional that they know and trust. And during the evaluation, it's important as a parent to know what is important to share about your child. It's important to share anything that you feel might be clinically relevant about their developmental history, about their medical history, to really let the clinician know what the child's life has been like. And then an interview with the child is really essential to figure out what this child is like. And additionally, in more complex cases, a natural observation of the child in the home or in the school environment might also be important to tease out what this child is like in your office from what they're like in the school.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on ADHD in school.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Jacqueline Eisman about ADHD in school. So the first stop is the pediatrician.
Exactly.
And the pediatrician, even though the pediatrician isn't an expert, has the reality check of having seen a gazillion kids. Right. But the idea is if the child is sufficiently frightened in the pediatrician's office that the child is not acting out, a parent will have to be alert enough to these kinds of symptoms to tell the pediatrician.
Right. And that's sometimes why that natural observation, either in the classroom or in the home environment, might be very important for the professional.
What's the current thinking? You mentioned medication. What's the current thinking about medication? I know that the pendulum seems to swing back and forth and back and forth.
All parents have concerns about giving medication to their children. Are there children out there that do well with no medication? Absolutely. Do most of the children with ADHD do well without medication? Probably not. When the symptoms of ADHD do cause sufficient disruption in a child's life, it's time for a trial, probably, of medication. Parents often worry about the short-term effects or the long-term side effects of medication, and these concerns are very valid. However, they're not necessarily significant enough to stop taking medication or terminate the use of medication. While prescription drugs are a touchy subject for many parents, the research has clearly shown that for some children, this is the most effective intervention.
Is it now possible to trace kids who have had this kind of medication for 15 years, 20 years, that kind of thing, taking it all the way through adulthood so we sort of know how these drugs interact?
Yes, there have been analytic studies. In our chapter 3 of our book, we look at medication and the long-term effects, and we show the results of many studies that look long-term at the effects of medication on children throughout being a teenager and an adult.
So parents shouldn't be afraid of if the kid starts taking the medication at age 5 when he's 16. The studies have shown that it seems to be quite safe.
It does. When parents have concerns, however, I think it's important that they touch base with their doctor and let them know the concerns that they're seeing about any sort of side effects that the child or a teenager is experiencing from taking the medication. It's really important that parents feel that they have the right to assert themselves and say, hey, I think this medication might be doing this certain thing to my child. For example, it might be limiting their appetite, or it might be causing some, you know, emotional difficulties that they weren't expecting.
Are there lots of side effects with these medications?
There can be a number. It's really individualized in terms of how children kind of respond to the medication. It kind of differs, but depending on the kid, some children have no side effects whatsoever, and some kids have to go through a number of medications till they find the medication that fits right for them and doesn't have any real side effects or side effects that they can at least tolerate.
But the general thinking in the medical community is that this body of medications is a safe thing to give kids.
Absolutely.
For many years.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's important to give kids what's called a vacation from taking medications, which might mean over the weekend or over the summertime, they stop taking medications. And during that time, it allows the medication to kind of wear off for a little bit. There are some studies that show that there can be a very small decrease in growth among children that are taking the medications, but we're only talking about a half an inch or something like that. So these vacations allow the time for the medication to get out of the body and then children to kind of resume normal growth.
How can parents best advocate for their children as students? What might be some minefields to avoid with the schools?
Well, I think it's important to remember that parents really are the best advocates for their children. Becoming as familiar as you can about the law and your rights as a parent is really important. Knowledge can be very empowering and allows children to be the most effective that they can be to work to ensure that children receive the help that they need. And you know your child the best. Long after the school year is out and after their schooling is even finished, your child will still be yours. As a parent, you want to make sure that you can do what is best for your child. And therefore, it's important to advocate for your child and assert what you believe that your child needs. However, it's also important to create a very productive working relationship with the school staff. Whenever possible, you should avoid creating any sort of controversial or adversarial relationship with the school. Collaboration really is key.
So do you advocate that at the beginning of a school year, a parent who has a kid who's been diagnosed meet specially with the teacher and say, listen, I just want to give you a heads up. And is there anything I can do? Or is let's keep lines of communication open. Is that a good way to start?
Yeah, that would be a really good way to start would be to go in, touch base with the teacher, let them know your concerns and also state that you're available to meet with the teacher and be a support to the teacher and help out in any way that you can in the home environment or with the child's needs at school.
One of the things that I've noticed over the years is there seem to be in some counties groups for students who have ADHD, high school students, it would be, that are not only sort of networking groups, but sometimes these kids go and speak to other groups of adults in whatever format it is. Maybe the groups are thinking about trying to advocate for certain kinds of reforms in the schools or whatever. But these kids are very impressive advocates for themselves and for kids who are similar.
Right. Absolutely. Learning how to be an advocate as a child or a teenager with ADHD is extremely important. Knowing not only what you need, but also knowing how to help other people with ADHD with similar difficulties is really very important. And those types of groups can also be great because it allows children, like you said, that opportunity to network with each other and to get to know other people that have similar difficulties and feel like they're not alone.
What should teachers know? We talked a little bit about how parents can clue them in a little bit, but what things do they need to do to sort of be more responsible to their ADHD students?
When a child is diagnosed with ADHD, the education plan really should be a collaboration between the parent, the child, the teachers, and the rest of the school staff. Children with ADHD rarely find themselves as actively engaged in learning as other kids do. It's really the responsibility of every teacher that recognizes that a child may have difficulties with attention and hyperactivity to refer them to get an appropriate diagnosis.
If they come in with a diagnosis already, then what?
It's really important that teachers know what's going to work for each individual child, that they take into account the teaching strategies and really have a sense of behavior management in the classroom. They know the classroom environmental factors. They know specific teaching techniques and also instructional strategies appropriate for each individual child. Classroom sizes may become larger and school budgets may become cut, but it's the responsibility of teachers to continue to advocate to make sure that students continue to receive the appropriate support despite all these harsh realities.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on ADHD in school.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Jacqueline Eisman about ADHD in school. Dr. Eisman, what has been your biggest surprise in working on this book?
When we started writing School Success for Kids with ADHD, we realized that there are things that worked with kids with ADHD and things that didn't. What we were most surprised about was the extent to which it was important to develop a multimodal, well-integrated plan for success for every child.
Now, multimodal means what?
It means taking all the different components so that everybody works together as a team. It means the teachers, it means the parents, it means the professional, and even the child themselves working together as a collaborative team. And our book emphasizes the importance of everybody really working together. Only if everybody works together in unison can the child have the most successful school and life experience.
That means facilitating some kind of communication or meetings or something on some kind of a regular basis to get a plan and then figure out how it's going, right?
That's right. Parents need to know that they're really not alone in all of this. There are medical doctors such as pediatricians and psychiatrists that can help with the medical interventions. There are psychologists and social workers that can help the child in terms of the home and school environment and also just a healthy development. There are also advocates that can help to ensure that children are programmed for appropriately and that they are in the right placement. And then the teachers can work with the parents all together in a collaborative way to make sure that this child has the best appropriate plan.
By the way, you said there are advocates in there toward the end of the list. Who are the advocates and how do you get one?
There are educational consultants and they can be found on chadd.org, chadd.org.
Dr. Eisman, can you tell us anything that might be comforting to parents who are really struggling with worries about these issues?
Sure. Many individuals with ADHD have made incredible contributions to society. One of the greatest examples is the Olympian Michael Phelps. He struggled with his ADHD in school, and he certainly has been able to overcome his ADHD and made a great contribution to society.
And he was the famous swimmer, right?
Absolutely.
With how many? 8 gold medals, is that right?
I think he has 14 now.
14 gold medals. Good grief.
When you say overcome his ADHD, what does that mean?
He's been able to be successful in life despite his ADHD.
So kids who have ADHD, it's not a sentence that means that you can't concentrate ever. It means you have to figure out different ways to be able to concentrate.
Right. Well, not all of our children will be as successful and become the next Michael Phelps. We certainly have ample evidence that school interventions and interventions outside of the school can really promote success in adulthood.
Defining success in adulthood, we mean things like being able to focus on a task, being able to deal with delayed gratification, those kinds of things that sort of are the building blocks of getting where you want to go.
Exactly.
When I was teaching high school, I had a student in one of my classes who had clear problems with staying still and paying attention, and he was also a troublemaker, but in a very quiet, hard-to-catch way. There would be times when, for example, every child in the room would drop a pencil at the same time. There were times when the clock disappeared from the classroom wall, and we knew who had it, but we couldn't prove it.
Oh, no.
And so he was a difficult student to teach, but he did eventually graduate from high school. Years later, I was in a McDonald's with my first child, who was probably about a year and a half, 2 years old, and a young man comes over to me. "Are you Mrs. Perlis?" I said, "Yes." "Well, I'm," and he tells me his name, and my jaw dropped. I said, "What are you doing now?" He said, "I own my own business." I then chatted with him for a few minutes about his business. He was driving a truck, he said. And so I left the McDonald's and out parked in front was the biggest trucking rig I've ever seen in my life, black and shiny, and his name was on the side of the truck. And so I saw this young man with terrible problems with ADD or ADHD had succeeded.
In addition to your book, School Success for Kids with ADHD, what resources would you recommend for our listeners who want to pursue further some of these important issues?
One of the greatest books is Taking Charge of ADHD by Russell Barkley. Another resource is Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, CHADD.org, CHADD.org. We also have a book entitled 101 School Success Tools for Students with ADHD that is a collaboration between myself, Dr. Steven Silverman, and Sue Jeweler. This workbook will have reproducible worksheets that display specific techniques that can be used by teachers and parents. And additional links can be found to resources on my website, handsonpsychology.com. That's HANDSONPSYCHOLOGY.com.
Okay. Well, we have a lot to go on here, and all of our listeners who really want to learn more have had a good start with this. So, Dr. Jackie Eisman, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you again for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Dr. Eisman's book, School Success for Kids with ADHD. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 414, and if you can, tell us what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or organizations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective programming. Parents' Perspective Incorporated is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today, it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Donations can be made online through GiveDirect or iGive.com or MissionFish at eBay. Or you can send checks or money orders to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. Thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Elizabeth Buckle. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.